You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is the 10th of March 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, today I am joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told and Communism by the Back Door, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Looking forward to today's programme and I wish everybody out there all the best for the weekend coming.
Yeah, it's good that we have our show on a Friday night. I think it sends everyone off into the weekend in a good mood, gives them something to look forward to at the end of the week. Everyone's finished working and they can crack open a beer and listen to us two waffle on.
Well, I can always depress them.
Let's hope we don't depress them too much with tonight's subject. We're gonna have a little look at democracy tonight and why people think it's such a fantastic and wonderful thing, and it's actually not. It's possibly the worst form of governance that we actually have. And one thing that I was thinking about this that made me think of this week, I was thinking of how every 5 years they can afford to change the prime minister. And if that doesn't prove to you that the prime minister or the president is just a puppet, then I don't know what will. How can you just parachute somebody into the job, and once after 5 years that they've just learned how to do the job, and you move them out and you move somebody else in there, and you tell everyone that anybody can be president if you work hard, you can be president. You're just going to end up putting the people there that are desperate to look as if they have power, because they obviously haven't got any power. It's the people behind them that have the power, isn't it?
Well, it's got to be. I mean, just for the simple, if you just look, if somebody's doing a really great job, after 5 years, they've got to go.
Yeah, but they say it's about
what's
Putin.
What's the point in that, you know? Yeah, exactly.
That's what they say about Putin. Putin has done a really, really good job of being president of the Russian Federation. And what does the media say? Why is he still there? Where are the other parties? Other parties, why would anyone want to form another party when Vladimir Putin is doing such a good job of what he's doing?
He's a man for the job, yeah, exactly. But then again, if you really look into democracy, what I found was that the New World Order have two ways of actually running a country. And one is communism, out-and-out communism, where what you see is what you get with a dictator. And a democracy, which gives you the illusion of that you can remove by voting this particular person who's in power, or he has to leave after 5 years anyway. But all the time, it is just a continuation of that dictatorship, but from behind the scenes, because nothing ever changes whether in Britain, the UK, the Conservatives get in or Labour get in. Nothing actually ever changes when you look back.
And people are just given this disillusion that it's the people that have the power, because they're the ones that vote for whoever it is to get into power. But the very fact that you're being given a choice in this says that one of those in that choice isn't going to be good for you. What you want is the best person for the job. You don't want a choice. You just want the best person for the job. If you have different parties, do you know what I mean, Dennis? You've got the right party, party, the Liberal Party, the Democratic Party. What about the party for the country? And what they're going to do is put the country's needs first.
Yeah, well, you've got to look at the power, what's giving you that selection, because there must be a power to say these are the people selected for you to choose, if you get what I'm saying. You know, at the end of the day, people really believe that, the people they're voting for will do the job that they require, when really they'll do the job that people with the power, what they want, which is always the same, no matter what party's in.
The people that have paid for all the campaign and the campaign promises and all the advertisements. Yeah, it's a total illusion. It's an illusion that the people are putting these people in, and it's not the people that are putting them in. It's the media companies and it's the banks that fund these campaigns. And of course, once the people get into power, they expect to be done favours. They expect to be repaid for putting those people in, and that's why they don't care if one goes after two terms, one or two terms.
Doesn't really matter,
just put another one in, and it doesn't matter which party it gets in either. Because it's they literally can put anybody in at all, I think, Dennis. Especially with this idea of equality that they keep putting across to us, that everybody is equal. Just as a quick side note, you know, I've mentioned before about how if we keep going down this equality path, we'll end up with somebody with Down syndrome as prime minister. One of the talking points on the television channels this week has been about a mother of a Down syndrome daughter, and she says, please drop the minimum wage for people with learning difficulties, because people with learning difficulties cannot get jobs if they're looking to be paid the full wage. Just give her half the wage, because she can only do half the work, and that will be fine. And all the lefties and all the liberals have gone absolutely wild at this, saying that this Down syndrome person should be given the full wage, and they've been calling it a quote-unquote perceived disability, as if she's not really disabled, it's all in the mind, and saying that she should be paid the money even though she can't do the job, even though it's going to cost the people to do the job. And apparently 87% of the country agree with that somebody who can't do the job should just be, they should just pretend that they can do the job and give them the money for that anyway. And this is just the start of it. Because if she's allowed to do any job she wants without being qualified, then yes, so it could be prime minister. So we're already on the first step towards that. I know it's a bit of an aside.
I think at the end of the day, they're aiming at the sympathy of people. Do you somebody like with a Down syndrome and not getting a full wage? It just, you know, I think they're playing on that sympathy card. That's my feeling anyway. It's the first I've heard about it, but for sure it's a strange one, I'm going to be honest.
This equality idea, democracy, it's completely unnatural, isn't it? It goes against the natural hierarchy.
It's all right being equal, but at what stage do you call equal? We can all be equal in skin, you know.
Well, we're equal under the law is all that we should be, is equal under the law, one life for another life. And even that only applies if it's a life from within your own race. If it's a life within another race, how can that be worth the same?
I mean, you can't say that everybody's equal. I know there's some people more intelligent than me. I know there's some people can run faster than me, you know, but vice versa, I could be the same with other people. It's not a question of, it's an impossibility to say that we're all equal.
Well, the point of life is to be the best you can possibly be, to succeed at what you do, isn't it? You want to excel at whatever it is that you do. The point of life isn't to make everybody equal, to bring everybody down to the lowest.
Not for us, but the powers that be like to think that people can think like that, because that makes everybody happy, if you like.
Well, this is the big scam, isn't it? They know that isn't right. But 90% of the population think that is right. They think that that's some noble aim that we should be striving for, to make everybody equal, to make the whole world democratic, so that every country decides who is going to rule that country, not on aptitude, not on skills, not on ability, but just on the most amount of people that vote for them. And the majority of the people are incompetent. It's only ever a tiny minority that are the elite, only a tiny minority that are really competent to judge in these important matters. So instead of giving that very, very important role to a group of people that are competent enough to judge, they give that role to the people least competent enough to judge. They give that to the majority.
Well, they school them as well, don't they? I mean, Cameron was schooled and Blair was schooled, I think, before they actually got the job. But they're always intended to get the job.
Well, they'll make them out to be a man of the people. I mean, just look at that, Dennis. I mean, look, you've got David Cameron, a silver spoon, born with a silver spoon hanging out of his backside. And yet he somehow manages to make his way to the top there. He knows nothing about what it's like to work. He's never done a day's work in his life before. And yet he's supposed to be deciding all these decisions, what's best for us? And look what he does as soon as he gets in there. Does he carry out the promises that his party made? Does he do his best for the British people? No, he doesn't. The first thing he does is start calling sodomy marriage, redefines the word marriage.
No difference to what Blair did when Blair gets in, and you would expect Blair, if you were to believe that, you know, being a Labour guy, he has more sympathy with the working class. As soon as Blair gets in, what does he do? He gives all the freedoms to the homosexuals. So, you know.
So there you've got the two sides. Changes. You've got two sides there, haven't you? You've got Labour and Conservative, or Democrat and Republican, if it's America. And each side is supposed to just concentrate on one part of the population. How can they just concentrate on one part of the population? They've got to concentrate on the whole nation, which is why the system hates nationalism so much, because they know that if the people were to hear about it, that would appeal to them. Because everybody isn't all just completely into working class things and just thinks about working or just thinks about tradition. People think about their nation the same way as they don't just think about one member of their family. They look out for their whole family. And nationalism looks out for the whole nation, and democracy just looks out for specific parts, or pretends to be looking out for specific parts of the population, which just causes one part of the population to be riled up and angry at the other. And just look at the tactics they use, Dennis. All they will talk about is taxing the rich. We must tax the rich. We must tax the businesses more. We must get more money. So what is that actually saying? What are the people saying when they're doing that? What they're doing is saying we must get more money out of the population for the government.
Well,
essentially,
I said last week, didn't I? I said I've never known a country like the UK, which every single time since I can remember, that instead of somebody coming on and saying, right, you know, we're going to build roads for infrastructure, we're going to allow money for more education, etc., it's always cut back, cut back, cut back, cut back. And what we got this week with the budget again was cuts. And even tonight, you know, I hear that education, although they're actually saying that they're spending more money than at any time in history with inflation and everything else, it actually doesn't work like that. It looks like that on paper. So there we've got our education still being cut back, and we're getting the health service cut back, and everything else is getting cut back. But I'll guarantee you, when I look at the Queen's wages this end of the year, they've gone up, and one or two others up there as well.
Well, all the while you have democracy, you're going to have a group of very rich people in the background that are controlling these puppets out the front. And looking at the left, looking at Jeremy Corbyn and the Liberal Democrats and the more communist side, it's exactly the same. Again, they are all funded by the bankers, and they just try to push the equality thing all the more. Trying to say that everybody should be equal, all the races should be equal, Britain should be open doors, welcoming in everyone, and the problem isn't immigration, it's that we're not doing enough for the immigrants. None of them are saying we should be doing what's best for ourselves, we should be doing what's best for the British people, and we should have the finest example of a Brit running everything. Somebody who's the most competent, somebody who's got the most skills, the most intelligence, somebody who's worked the hardest, someone who has shown their valour on the battlefield, whatever that battlefield was, which is how it always used to be. It always used to be the very best of society would be running the society. And years ago, you could rely upon genetics, you could rely upon the upper classes marrying the other upper classes, and you'd have a good king. All that has become corrupted now. But even if you didn't have a good king, you would still have a strong aristocracy behind him, a highly educated, highly literate, highly competent aristocracy. You'd have this Witten, and they would be advising the king and telling the king what to do. And the king would be the champion of the poor. So it was like a natural hierarchy. You had the king right at the very top, and he had, you had his advisors underneath him. You had the very various poor at the bottom, but he was their champion. He, you know, you hear about these stories about the king dressing up in peasants' clothing and walking around among the poor to find out how their lives were. If you look at Alfred the Great, apparently he hanged 100 judges, and he used to sit in the courthouse when the poor were being tried, because he was the champion of the poor. So this is having a functioning society. Yeah, this is a functioning society by looking at at the natural hierarchy of things.
Well, something's gone wrong somewhere. I mean, but then again, I mean, I saw pictures of an incident not too long ago on the internet of Prince Charles's car being attacked and covered in paint as it was passing a demonstration in London. I saw a YouTube video of actually people trying to climb over the gates of Buckingham Palace at one point, and police had to restrict them, which was never shown in mainstream anyway. So I hark back to this little TV set in the corner of the room, which will dictate just what you know and what will educate you. It's not always true, and they'll hide a lot.
Well, they were really shocked at that. If you saw the look on his face when that happened, he was really shocked at that. Now, there are two things I think about that. I think he is wrong to have misunderstood the people and for thinking that as the king or as the prince, he can just get away with doing nothing. And I think the people were wrong to do that because it shows a disrespect for tradition and the tradition of the monarchy. So I think they're both in the wrong. But what do you do when you have a stalemate like that? What do you do when you have a royalty, you have a royal family that you know could start Brexit tomorrow, that you know could say, make a law, get out all of the non-whites, Britain is for the British. They could do that, and they don't. That Queen, she looks out from Buckingham Palace on a sea of black faces, 65% non-white. And she doesn't seem to care. She just doesn't seem to care. But so the royalty, the monarchy, our original system is messed up. And that was deliberately messed up because they wanted to bring in this democracy. They wanted the people to think that they were being ruled by the people, being ruled by the vote. And this is where it's ended up to today. But the majority of people still believe that democracy is good. We're still exporting it to the Middle East, aren't we, Dennis? You know, they're still saying democracy in Syria, democracy in Iraq.
Yeah, well, this is democracy's got this kind of an illusion of for everybody to think that it's actually good, when actually, as I said, it is another means of governing a country by the power behind it all. Either, you know, by communism or by democracy, there is no real difference. When they export it, as they did with Germany after World War One, for instance, the Weimar Republic was a coalition of eight parties, which, you know, they called it democracy, but at the end of the day, it didn't quite work out. You know, after a year or two, there was a communist uprising. Thankfully, the leaders were put down. And put to death. But then there was another uprising from the nationalists, and that was only stopped because of a strike was called, a general strike. So obviously people weren't happy with the situation in the Weimar, for good reason, because I was looking into this particular subject, and this probably slayer this man, because, you know, you hear about how bad things were. But in 1914, right, a loaf of bread was 13 cents. And by the time of 1922, it was $3.50, which is bad enough. But by January 23, it was $700 for a loaf of bread. Now, you remember, you know, they talk about people walking around with wheelbarrows full of money and getting rid of, you know, buying with the wages as quick as they can, because by the time you get to the shops, the prices go up. But from, I'm talking now January 23, by the time it gets to December, of that year, for a loaf of bread, what cost 13 cents in 1914, $100 billion. I mean, it was horrific. And the way they got around it is they got in another chancellor. Now, when I'm saying they, I believe, you know, the bankers, you know, do rule the world. These are the people who put these people in power. And Gustav Strassmann came in, scrapped all the old money, invented a new currency, and then started to pay reparations, because obviously during this time when all this financial system was about to collapse. Germany couldn't afford to pay the reparations, which meant in peacetime, French and Belgian soldiers invaded Germany and took what reparations they could. The Germans went on strike and they replaced the German workers with their own workers from their own country. So French and Belgian workers went in there. And this is in peacetime.
So instead of saying that the system's wrong, we can't have eight parties in power, we can't have everything decided by a committee, look what's happened, inflation's gone through the roof. Instead of that, they said, oh, okay, we'll vote someone else in.
So what happened then was, I mean, this is always fascinating to me because I see sometimes in YouTube comments when people turn around and say, Hitler might have gone into power, but it wasn't that bad in Germany then. You know, from 1923 onwards, everything was fine. So I looked into it, and it's actually called the Dawes Plan. And what the situation was, this Stresemann, what he did, he invented this new currency called the Rentenmark, and then he started the repayments again. But the way he got the repayments was by borrowing money from the American banks. So consequently now, he's borrowing with interest to pay off a debt. So he then pays off the French and the British, and then the French and the British pay back money to the Americans, which, you know, they owed after World War One. Point being, that's fine for that number of years, but it's a false recovery because if anything happens to the US, everything goes up in smoke. Well, consequently, in 1929, that's just 5 years after Stresemann came in, the bankers, I believe now, crashed the economy on purpose. Every single Christian Western country went bankrupt in 1929 and was turned into a corporation, which is why I believe they bankrupted Wall Street, which affected the whole world. That is when, in 1933, Hitler came to power, because obviously unemployment rose again in Germany and people were actually starving again. He came into power, and instead of, you know, compromising with the bankers, kicked them out and said, enough is enough. We're going to make our own economy strong, which he did. And within a couple of years, Germany became Germany, you know, the powerhouse in Europe. So it was a false recovery, but again, implemented, I believe, by the victors of World War One.
So you had National Socialist Germany, which tried something different from democracy, which tried fascism. It succeeded. It brought the country back from the brink. The rest of the world declared war on it, destroyed the country. And then after that, they forced democracy back on them again. And this time, they added loads of small print, didn't they? About actually being controlled by the Allies instead of Germany.
But this came eventually. I mean, obviously, Russia took, you know, they handed Russia, or the Soviet Union, should I say, they handed half of Europe over to, and then obviously parts of Berlin, parts of Germany went to Soviet Union as well. But when the wall came down eventually, you know, in the early 90s, obviously, I believe that the Soviet Union was crashed on purpose, because I always felt that the bankers from the Bolshevik Revolution supported communism in the Soviet Union. But they decided then, I feel, that they'd had enough of that and crashed the Soviet Union, because they were going to replace it with the EU. And when you find, since that crash, a lot of these countries have now joined the EU. And most of these countries, what were under communism, like Hungary, etc., are the ones that are now most against all this immigration, because they've suffered under communism. I think they're realizing that they're still under communism in the EU. So anyway, at that point, you know, things have got to be sorted out. And in The Greatest Story Never Told, I actually showed that although they ratified a new constitution in 1949, there was a secret state treaty was also signed, which granted the Allies complete control over education and all licensed media, press and radio, television and publishing houses right up to the year of 2000 or 99, which will probably get renewed again if things are still the same. And this was confirmed by Major General a former head of the German military intelligence, in his book called Die Deutsche Karte, which was the German card. And he revealed that all this went on, and even though people think they're not occupied, obviously they still are.
So that must have been what they had been working on over the years. They must have achieved that throughout Europe, control of the banking, controlling of all the public ownership of things, control of education, control of the media. They must have just achieved all of that slowly, realised that they had all of that. Hitler realised what was going on, threw all of that off, and then after the war, they must have thought about all of this and put it down in writing. So they had it in writing, so they could say to Germany, this is what you have to put up with from now on.
That's right, yeah. I mean, they do things by law for a reason. Many things, I sometimes wonder why they bother, but what it does, it gives them this officialdom and right, for instance, to go and invade a country if they feel that a law's been broke. So even though today people don't really consider Germany to be occupied, certainly there's forces there who choose the people to be in charge, like Merkel, etc., which is why I laughed when it was found out that the US was tapping the mobile phones of people in Germany, and Merkel eventually found out that her phone had been tapped as well, and she kind of displayed a public display of anger. And I laughed at the time because, you know, what can she do? I mean, if Obama wants to have a phone tap, there's not a lot she can do about it, although she has to show it in public. But they would have just laughed her back.
Now, I think once they had it all worked out like that, once they had the plan all worked out, everything that they needed to control a country, the same as they were controlling the rest of Europe, they then must have thought about, well, now we need to export this to the rest of the world. We need to get democracy going in these other countries, countries like Iraq, countries like Syria, Iran, these countries that weren't actually democratic, that still had a natural hierarchy type system. So they then thought, well, how can we achieve this? So they first off, they thought, well, we'll have revolutions, and if the revolutions don't succeed, then we'll have wars. So this is where we end up with the big war in Iraq and the war that's happening in Syria now. But just to prove the point, they did exactly the same thing in Iraq, didn't they? They gave lots of secret orders.
Well, what happened was there's a YouTube video, and somebody has left a comment about how America hadn't really left Iraq. It's naive to think that they would conquer a country, third biggest oil in the world, in Iraq, that they would just simply hand it back over to the Iraqis again. It's just completely naive. But this guy was having a go at me, saying that I was totally brainwashed and I hated America so much that, you know, I would come out with such rubbish. But then, as I knew about certain things, what had gone in there, particularly this 100 laws of Paul Bremer. And Paul Bremer was the leader of the coalition provisional authority, the CPA, which is defunct now, and he was the one that laid down 100 laws before the United States left. I would just say that the US occupation finished in officially June 28, 2004, but really it was clear from the start that it was just, this was sovereignty in name and not indeed. There was a military occupation. They left 138,000 US soldiers and Marines plus 20,000 troops from other countries and an estimated 20,000 contractors, all under US control and immune from Iraqi laws. So this isn't a handing back over of a country. It's just superficial.
So this is what the end game is, isn't it? Is getting the country to hand over its resources, hand over the nationalization of things like railways and electricity and water supply, hand over control of the taxes and the budget to the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank so that they can dictate what the taxes are that are to be brought in, hand over the education to the United Nations, the UNICEF, so that they can be responsible for the history that's taught and the anthropology that's taught. And all the while that's going on, they will say, well, you can change the person that's in charge. Every 5 years, you can vote. You can change them for somebody else. But you can't change them for the natural system that you had before. You can't change them for national ownership of anything. And this is the point. You may have had a tyrant before, but that tyrant knew that that was his country. He may have treated some of them badly, but it was his country. He didn't want to let it go. He obviously isn't going to want it to fall apart and be ruined because it's his. So even if you do have a tyrant, that's better than democracy, I think. At least it's owned by your own tyrant, not someone else.
I can give you some examples why it is better than democracy. I mean, these laws allowed the US corporations operating in Iraq to own every business, do all the work and send all the money back to America. Nothing needed to be reinvested locally to service the Iraqi economy. No Iraqi needed to be hired. No public services needed to be guaranteed. Workers' rights were completely ignored. And the corporations could take out all the investments at any time. That's the basis of what these 100 laws meant to an Iraqi. And for instance, I'll give you an example. Order 40, it turns the banking sector from a state-run to a market-driven system overnight by allowing foreign banks to enter the Iraqi market and purchase up to 50% of the Iraqi banks.
Just reposition it.
None of these laws can be overturned.
Well, I think laws like that, they go back to the original laws that the Bank of England had. I know that in the laws of England, it's written that no employee of the Bank of England can ever be arrested for anything. They can never be charged with any crimes. The bank can never be audited. They're all above that. They come under the heading of the Crown. And all the courts come under the Crown, basically. The Crown is a sovereign power, and the banks have the sovereignty. They're called the Crown. So that's the same. It's the same thing with the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. And when they go into a country, when they destroy a country and then say, and now you've got to accept our loans to rebuild everything, that's part of the agreement. They're above all the laws. They, in effect, make the laws.
But they plundered all the gold, by the way, as well, because I don't think Germany's ever got their gold back. I'm pretty sure Iraq have never got their gold back. And I'm pretty sure Libya's never got their gold back. So that gold is sitting somewhere.
Well, they like to take that away because they don't want people using a gold currency. They want people using a currency that they just print up themselves.
That's right.
They want the rights to do that.
Another example, number 49, is pretty simple one, drops the tax rate on corporations from a high of 40% to a flat rate of 15%. So they even get it at a lower rate of tax.
Well, if the corporations weren't multinational, if they weren't internationally owned, that would be a good thing. I mean, that's what Donald Trump is trying to do in America at the moment, is drop the business tax, but only for the national businesses. But if you do that for the international businesses, then that means that the people
are
bored.
They're
just going to plunder the country, loot and plunder, which is exactly what they've done in Iraq. That's what they want to do to every country that's on their list. There were seven of them, wasn't there? Iraq, Iran, Libya, Sudan, North Korea. North Korea's only still there because it has nukes.
It keeps throwing bombs up every now and again, doesn't it? Missiles.
Yeah, well,
I think
he has to.
He's learned from the Middle East. I think he knows that if he throws the odd missile up with people know that he has nuclear arms, then they're going to think twice about invading. I think.
Right, how dishonorable can you get? Gaddafi makes peace with the West, gets rid of all his weapons, and how does the West repay him? They set off an armed revolution in the middle of Libya and assassinate him. As soon as he's got his guard down.
In public, just like Mussolini, so nothing changes.
Well, they want to force this system on everyone. And the problem is most of the people fall for it. Most of the people believe it. And you end up with people in the East and in the Middle East that seem to be desperate for democracy. They want the human rights. They want the democracy, especially in places like Tibet. And America will fund these groups and get them to try and fight back against the Chinese or against whatever government they've got there. And they really believe it. They believe that they will get human rights and they'll have a say in who's in power and they'll get the best person in power. And they won't. They will always get the worst person in power. Look at South Korea. They've been trumpeting South Korea as one of the newest democracies. It's had two different governments, I think, since it's actually become democratic. And look what's just happened now. The female president has just been brought up on charges. She's just had to drop her diplomatic immunity. She's hiding in the palace at the moment, and she's up on charges of corruption, because democracy just attracts corrupt people to the highest positions in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we said earlier, like, to me, democracy is what they say. Two wolves and a lamb voting what's for supper. Simple as that.
It's a scramble for it to look as if you have power, because they don't have any real power. They just have the semblance of power. It's just all about the ego. They can't do anything without being told first that they can do it by their backers. And you look at Donald Trump. Look at the trouble that he's had just trying to secure the borders from seven countries that have a lot of terrorism in them. It's been practically impossible for him to do that. He hasn't just had the courts against him. He's had the entire media against him. He's had all these various groups elsewhere in the world that have been protesting against him. And it's all been organized by the deep state, by the New World Order, by the Jews, whatever you want to call it. These people that are in the background that are the ones that really call the shots.
Well, I've heard that Obama's opened up 280 offices all over America in a way to try and undermine Trump all the way through. So that's another new for me. You know, for somebody to be able to do that to me, that's treason.
Well, it is. But if you look at the ways that they try to achieve this with these revolutions, if you look at these color revolutions that they've had and what happened in the Ukraine, Ukraine wanted to have democracy. They wanted to have the Western style democracy. And look what's happened to them. They've got Jews running everything, and their revolution was funded by America. You got the Syrians. A small amount of Syrians said that they wanted democracy, and they were funded by America and by the private organizations, yeah, corporations like Soros. And look what happened to the country. They destroyed the country. The ones that genuinely wanted a different democratic system, within a few weeks they changed their minds because they could see what the truth of it all was.
They're suffering in Libya now.
Yeah, exactly the same in Libya. They destroyed the country. What they do is they find the genuine people that genuinely want the democracy and they encourage them. And at the same time, they're also paying all these gangs and thugs and criminals to give them the backup to take over, basically. And once they do take over, none of these genuine people, the ones that really wanted the best for their country, none of them are put in power. It's always the generals or the jihadis or the communists.
Yeah, the ones that's chosen, to do their bidding. Yeah, I mean, to me, like I said, I've said it before, in Syria, places like that, it's no different to me, to the Bolshevik Revolution. It was funded by American banks, and just like the Libyan Revolution was also funded by the Rothschilds and the banks. No different. But I'll tell you one law which did amuse me. Well, I'm saying amuse me. I couldn't believe when I read it. Was Order Number 17, which states it grants foreign contractors, including private security firms, full immunity from Iraq's laws, even if they injure a third party by killing someone or causing environmental damage such as dumping toxic chemicals or poisoning drinking water. The injured third party cannot turn to the Iraqi legal system. Rather, the charge have to be brought up in a US court under US laws. Now, you tell me if that's not an occupied country or not.
Well, I bet they had something similar, as you're saying, when they had the Bolshevik Revolution. I bet these companies and these banks had similar, only it wasn't so so legal. It wasn't put down in legal terms. It was just that we've lent you this money, we're in charge now. If somebody dies, if people get chemical poisoning or what have you, you're not going to be able to sue us. And if you look at the... You know, they had the illusion of democracy as well in the Soviet Union. They had regular elections, only the there was no choice of getting somebody new in there. They were all people that had just been put there that were loyal to the regime. And once they were in power, it was always the people in the background. And you can see that these people in the background, who were 99% Jewish, they were all still there. Even when you'd get a new leader of the Soviet, of one of these countries in the Soviet Union, or a completely new government, you would still have these same people in the background, usually running the secret service, the NKVD, or the equivalent.
Well, they've done the same in Iraq. I mean, you've got to bear in mind, I've just rhymed off three of the laws. There's another 97 of these. And if I could just quote this last one for you, number 57. This has created and appointed an inspector within every Iraqi ministry with 5-year terms, who can perform audits, write policies, and have full access to all offices and materials and employees of the ministries. Then there are about approximately 200, mostly US and other international advisors, who remain embedded as consultants in every Iraqi ministry well after the official occupation has ended. So in other words, they've left people there to oversee everything.
Oh, they'll be there forevermore, won't they, these multinational corporations. This is
It's naive of people to think any different.
Well, yeah, if you look at Syria, before all this trouble that happened in Syria, the reason why they wanted to go in there is because it was completely illegal for any foreigner to have Syrian citizenship. It was illegal for any foreigner to own any Syrian businesses, illegal for any foreigner to own any Syrian lands. And this is all just common sense. So if you think of...
I'm going to just interrupt you there a second. That's exactly what Hitler did when Hitler came to power.
Well, yeah, well, and the reason why he did that is because that's exactly the way Europe always used to be. You never used to be able to sell your land to a foreigner. You couldn't even sell your home because that was your family home. You would have to pass that on to your descendants. You had a certain amount of land. You had your home on it. You had your family living around you. You couldn't sell that on. What were your grandchildren's grandchildren going to be living? What were they going to be living in? What were they going to be living off if it had been sold to somebody else? The whole idea of selling property like that, that's completely alien to white people. That's a Jewish idea that was brought in by the Jews, along with their new system of banking based on usury, which goes hand in hand with democracy.
Exactly. In fact, there's a leaked memo from a British Attorney General, this will make you smile, Lord Goldsmith. Now, that sounds Jewish, if I've ever heard a name. But he warned Tony Blair that the imposition of a major structural economic reforms would not be authorised by international law. In other words, what they've done is illegal. But they're still walking around free. No one's picking up the Bushes. No one's picking up the Blairs, because these people, these bankers who backed them, are still in charge.
Well, they're above the law, aren't they? If you look at the bankers crash that we had, I'm not sure how many years back it was, and everyone was saying, well, these bankers must be taken to court for this. None of them were taken to court. We bailed out the banks, billions. I mean, the Bank of Scotland still hasn't made its money back. They did all that quantitative easing. They put all that money back into their money supply. None of the bankers were actually taken to court. I think the only bankers that were ever taken to court were in Iceland. And Iceland got rid of their government. And why was Iceland able to do that? Iceland was able to do that because it was still 99% Icelandic. It was still Icelandic people. They had enough ethnic solidarity to get together and all bang their pots and pans and get the whole government out. And you can't do that in a multicultural society. You just couldn't do it.
It's amazing. Without the internet, most of this would be totally unknown. And there's still a lot unknown, but without the internet, it's just God knows what they got away with before then, because you can actually see how they work things, you know, in secret or even in public. It's just not shown on TV.
How can you have somebody from another race in your country that represents you? It's like, who do you want? Who would you rather have standing up for you, ruling over you? Somebody from your own family or somebody from another race, a foreigner?
Exactly, because it's going to be plundered, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't matter even if it's a bad egg from your own family. They're still going to be better than having a foreigner controlling things.
So that's right. So when these people say, "Oh, I don't believe in these dictatorships anyway," even when they think Bush was wrong, you know, all they're doing is putting another dictatorship in there, but with the illusion of democracy.
What do they call it? The communists. They call it the dictatorship of the proletariat, didn't they?
Yeah, I can call it another word.
the workers' paradise.
Yeah, well, that again is another illusion, as we know. I mean, Schiff, the banker, paid, I think he paid Trotsky something like 20 million to go and have your revolution. And obviously took the whole country back in return. So his return must have been phenomenal for 20 million.
Well, I believe what they did with Ukraine, when they took all the grain and starved all the people in the Ukraine, all that money was to go back on the loans that they'd borrowed from the foreign banks, wasn't it?
Well, there's a surprise.
None left. Nothing changes. For the people. If that had actually been Ukrainian people, they wouldn't have done that to their own people. They wouldn't have starved their people to death to pay the banks. They wouldn't do that today. They owed lots of money on the gas, I believe, to Russia. And they moved to somebody else. They didn't say, yeah, we'll starve the country and just pay that back.
How's Greece doing these days? Because they were over the barrel with the banks and all, weren't they?
Well, again, that's another good example, isn't it? I mean, you got Greece that joins up with the European Union, this supposed wonderful new democracy, and straight away Greece is pretty much destroyed. Instead of going back to their own currency and employing people within Greece and setting up their own national companies, they can't, because they signed all these agreements with the World Bank and the IMF and the European Union, and they've got to do what the European Union says. So the European Union says, well, you must have austerity. You must cut back on everything. You must have 60% unemployed. And we'll move
in. Who's behind the EU?
We'll buy up your ferry ports, and we'll buy up your Roman temples, and we'll buy up everything that's worth anything, while it's pennies, while you're all poor, and the currency's crashed. But you still got democracy.
Same people.
Still got democracy. Yeah. You can vote Tsipras in.
Yeah, but you can't have the extreme right, because we put them in prison.
Yeah. Well, they make the rules up as they go along, don't they?
Of course they do. Yeah, because it's the same people all the time. The same people back in World War One, same people in World War Two, same people in Iraq, and the same people behind the EU with Greece and the rest of it.
They spent a few hundred years perfecting it, haven't they? They had their French Revolution.
They're clever people. I mean, I couldn't wake up in the morning and think of such destructive things as they did. I mean, they must wake up every single day and go into a cupboard somewhere and plan all these destructive means and laws to suffocate and plunder. But they've got to do to fine art.
Well, they're going to be thinking of every eventuality, aren't they? You know, if French Revolution, Glorious Revolution, Bolshevik Revolution, taking over the banks, running the systems, taking over the printing presses, taking over all the offices of government, working their way into government, working out what laws work best for them, what laws they actually need. And then when they destroy a country like Germany, like Iraq, then they get a chance to put all these laws down in writing for the first time.
Because it was all... Get somebody with a nice suit and tie, go on a television, call himself a news presenter, and everybody believes him.
Yeah, because it was all just unstated before. They weren't able to actually put it all down in writing, but then they've actually got the chance to, and then they can put it through the courts for the first time ever.
The easiest thing then is to say, just say, for instance, someone in Iraq kicks off a fuss. The easiest thing then to say is, oh, by the way, such a person in Iraq is now breaking the law, and we're going to have to go after him. And the old world looks on and says, yes, he is breaking the law, but that's why the law was put there in the first place.
And in countries like Britain, they still have that illusion there that the law still stands, that we do still have free speech, that criminals are still tried. And if we do find these criminals at the top, we can still go after them. Because we don't exactly have so much written into our laws as they've been able to do in these countries that they've taken over, I don't think, Dennis.
Well, the thing is, you know, we go back to 1929 again, when I said that every Western Christian country was then turned into a corporation. And that was for the sake of the bankers, so they can dodge around things like the Magna Carta, dodge around, like, you know, the amendments in America, where the president brings out an executive law rather every 4 or 5 years, so that they bypass all these things. And instead of having rights now in these countries, it's privileges. And privileges can be taken at any minute at any time. And that's the reason why they do it. And if you look at Australia, for instance, Australia now is a corporation with an address in Washington.
I think what it comes down to is, once you get divorced from the land, once the ethnicity gets divorced from the actual country that it's from, then you've been cut loose from all those rights that you had, all those duties that you had. They used to be called the usages of the land. If you wanted to use the land of Britain, you had to obey these laws, and you were protected by these laws. But now they've come up with human rights instead, which is divorced from the country of Britain, and it's divorced from the British people. And it means that there's no loyalty to the British people above the foreigners. We have all these treaties with these other countries that will export the British people to that other country to answer to any crimes. So we've been separated from the land that our ancestors fought and died on. If you look at Israel, they don't have any extradition treaties with any other country in the world.
That's right.
Any Jewish criminal can just flee back to Israel and they're safe. And that's not a bad thing, but every country in the world should be like that. Britain should be like that.
Yeah, that's the problem,
If you get back to your home, you should be safe. If you get back to your home country, you should be safe, and your people there can deal with you. If you're a bad one, you've committed crimes, then you can be tried for those crimes there. But to hand them over to somebody else, you just wouldn't do that. If your family, you look after your family. And that's what the race is.
Obviously, yeah, there's something going on behind the scenes at some point where, you know, all them laws are just turned over. And if a certain country like America asks for a certain person to be extradited, obviously with the same people running the same government in that particular country, they're going to say, yeah, there you go.
And so if you want this money, now we've destroyed your country. If you want this money to rebuild it, you have to accept all this small print that we're going to give you.
Well, actually, when I think about it, after World War II, all the American bases stayed over here. I mean, they just put RAF signs up, but they were actually American bases because they didn't want people to feel like that, you know, there was Americans still here and in a way occupying us, which, you know, is another scam because they did the same in Germany. And like I said, it just proves what they've done in Iraq. Nothing changes, you know. I mean, but to me, America's run from London anyway. You know, and has been for quite some time.
Well, that's what they've done everywhere, isn't it? They've put the army bases there, Germany and in the Pacific, as you say, in Britain. So if by any chance there is an uprising that isn't one that's sponsored by Soros or sponsored by the banks, then they've got the military there to put it down. So
well, funny enough,
system.
Just before I forget this, you know, I mean, I only found this out recently, is that Pearl Harbor actually was a naval base in Hawaii. Hawaii wasn't part of the US then. So they were actually doing it before, you know, World War II.
It's all about occupying the country and getting them to go along with what the bankers dictate, and giving people the illusion that it's their own people that are making the laws, that are making the rules. I think this is a surprise that Donald Trump is having, realizing that the presidency doesn't actually give him as much power as he originally thought.
That's right.
But it can't do, can it? If you can get rid of that person every 5 years,
or assassinate him.
Yeah, it obviously doesn't mean that much what sort of person that it is going to be. And obviously the people behind that system are going to be doing their best to cover every angle of it. So it doesn't matter who gets put in there, the system isn't going to change. That's why they were able to put a Negro in there. They were able to put Obama in there. And this is why eventually they'll be able to put someone with Down syndrome in as prime minister or president, and it won't make any difference because they'll have little power by then.
Because they haven't got the power anyway.
I hope we don't end up seeing a Down syndrome person in power. I think nationalism is going to reassert itself, and the people are going to reassert themselves, and we are going to take power back, and it has to. You know, that pendulum has to swing back the other way. It's really gone as far as it can go towards equality and democracy. It's got to go back to ethnic-based states.
When you look back in history, in times like this, it's always thrown up a figure or somebody, to help turn the tide. Now, whether or not that will happen again, we'll have to wait and see. But certainly back in history, certainly when in Germany's case, where that Versailles Treaty was implemented to destroy him, up rose Adolf Hitler, and even though he didn't eventually win the wars, he destroyed that treaty, and things did change after to a certain extent, and he saved Europe, obviously, from a complete Bolshevik invasion. So history has a way of, throwing these things up. We'll have to wait and see, to be honest.
Well, that's what's happened. That will happen because the aristocracy has been destroyed, the castes have interbred, so we've now got the warrior caste and the kingly caste. We've now got them in amongst the working class and in amongst the middle class, and every so often someone will arise that can do that. And we see them today. We see these focal points, these leaders of movements, people like Adolf Hitler, people like Cornelio Coggiano, and people today. We've got people in the alt-right that have got enough in them to lead a movement if the movement gets big enough, people that show that drive. But we're not seeing it in the in the political class. We're not seeing it in that top caste anymore, because it's all interbred. Most of them have interbred with Jews. We're the only ones left that haven't.
Exactly.
They go after the richer people, and then they're the sort of people that they put in as their puppets, and they're the ones that make all these promises to the poor, to the working classes. We'll lower the taxes. We'll give you free houses if you vote for us. The left side of things, and it's all about taking money. Yeah, it's all about just taking more money from the people that have made the money. So the people that have made the money don't want to.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's the point in being the best at what you do and making as much money as you can if 60% of it is going to get spent on Negroes?
You've got a point.
We're getting near the end of the podcast, Dennis.
Okay.
I think you can tell that. Do you want to let people know where they can find your work before we finish?
Yeah, truthfulout.tv is where you'll find both of the DVDs on sale. And if you want to watch them for free, you can go direct to the websites, communismbythebackdoor.tv. And the Great Story Never Told.tv. So, like I said right at the beginning, I hope everybody has a great weekend, and hopefully we'll see you all next week.
And and don't forget, you've also got your DVD coming out soon as well, haven't you? So people can sign up for that.
Yes,
Communism by the Back Door.
It's actually out now, yeah.
Oh, it's out now. Go out and buy Dennis's DVD. And we'll be back next Friday, same time, same place. So I'll say thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And as you just said, Dennis, we do hope you all have a wonderful weekend ahead of you.
tuned in to Radio Aryan.